The Mamre Revival, a melodrama in 12 acts. The first act. Enter chorus in a tall white gown he.
From Timon's towers, benownst of neither tribe that in this land doth mighty strife pursue, that they, their profits and advantages to gain, all villainy will undertake, that whosoever seeks Putresco's aid, foregoing fame in this our city's fight, must win or die, and dying win much more.
Exit the chorus. A bus drives across the stage. Putresco at the helm.
Now is my plan, unfinished, yet begun, with this fine bus to cripple Schiller quite, and of his merchandise 3 parts to steal and burn in sacred fire. The one a sword, renowned in deeds beside the Tyrian sea, with vigour and with expertise in war, Rameses was. The second, sundered yet from origins of doubtful provenance, this cudgel is. Beloved of men of steel, the third, of whom description must be shunned.
The bus halts. Enter a boy. You, sir, Putresco, rotten one that is, and like a bus without a stop or halt, and here a ticket.
Knave! Thou callst me bun! A name for lepers and for dogs more fit than for the greatest god that e'er bestrode the threefold world of bus and beak and boots. Tripartite he!
He rambles now, forsooth! Now listen to me!
As did the greater powers that fashioned as in wit this lowly world to bring a sum to riches many more. But no, be damned, such reasoning is false!
Exit in distraction. Enter Schiller.
I see, Putresco, that of late the sun that darks the sundial growing there below for days on end has not troubled to rise above the far horizon, nor the moon so cold and poor, unpeopled and unloved, vain image of fair Phoebus' limpid ray that strikes our heart anew, yet not eschewed. Remark, I faint, I fear I fade away. Sustain me, gods, as to each one in turn I pass the poisoned goblet and the cake and hope that...
You, sir, Schiller, shall you buy a ticket, nor shun the proper payment of your fare, lest you be caught within my vehicle, lacking the wherewithal to allow your staying there. I shall advise, be not improper found unticketed, or, as the gods ordained, your body from your head shall severed be and fed to starving cats.
God, sir, no pence there are within my pocket dark, nor groats, for I have not been beastly to the poor, nor yet have shunned the goodly wishing well, where men may read the past. There dwelt I long, yet watching in the water, lest some frog should leap therefrom, and burp an augury, on which my future I could carefully calculate upon a log.
Your wooden repartee annoys me. As of late the neighing of your horse incensed my wife, who suffered from the palsy. Her I shunned as doth Rangoon the pale explorer's heirs.
And so we see, my friend, no deeds are done, save to avenge the death that caused our woe.
Exit Schiller. Enter Marco Polo with a haversack. He empties it and sets out his wares upon the stage.
Good sir, see now my wares from distant parts, the Orient jam and pumpkins from the pole.
Exit Marco Polo. Enter Marco Polo on a bicycle with flat tires. He begins to reinflate them.
Oh, that the air in yonder pump could now swell like the blush upon my mistress' cheeks, and like the lark return in winter's plumes to strike my son Charybdis to the ground, wherein the darkling worm doth sate his lust, and where the viscous mole doth orgies hold within his grotesome hole. Oh, come, ye nymphs, and bear my air unto your lair, and there inflate, inflate, inflate the marbled sheen that circumvents the wheels of this my steed, and like a sonnet etched upon the path.
Enter boy with a football. You, sir!
Who?
Why, you bearded dolt, who speak of love while knowing less than babes, that, clinging helpless to their mother's breasts, repeat, the Punic wars, the Punic wars! 1,000 times unto the unhearing skies beneath the mother's chin. Revise your speech, or else, quite wordless, stay and reinflate my punctured ball of foot. than wholesome cat.
Insolent knave, my servant, come. Why wait'st?
I could not find the pump of which you spoke, long though I searched within the closet dim, and longer, oh, much longer, in the shed where all your 16 bicycles are kept, alone and cobwebbed, oiled but once a month, and many lacking aught to bikes behoven, a plenitude of pumps to incarnadine. Now my subject turns to fair romance, for baby bikes do now proliferate, with pumps born in the closet for besmothered. And methinks a goodly yield shall Schiller reap before the day is done. In towers by the distant lake there wait three luscious damosels of goodly ilk.
Indeed. Now hie we hence, my sturdy knave.
Exeunt Marco Polo and servant. I am besought by these a silly child. Odd's nape, I shun the reckless bourgeoisie. My wit doth eightfold exceed their skill at any trades behoving to their guilds, such as might enervate the witless wives, or please the gods, effeminate and pale, or earn an honest penny in a day, or at the pump despise the thirsty poor, who languor in their dying throes, or seem to sweat a liquid pure and crystalline from aught that's foul. Alas, alas, I go, lest Lethe's luring temptress on the prowl induce me now to quit this mortal flesh. Enter Marco Polo.
For God's sake, may you hold your peace, vile boy! The king this day is come to view his force, and I tell this grace of your...
Polo, you have naught to say, then I shall say it for you. Shame I hold not dear, nor penalty more grievous, than the grace of Schiller, whom I serve, beyond whose powers Polo's sons, the suitors of Rangoon, personages vile and horrible to see, who at that lady's door do endless dots and slobber all day long with languorous tongue like thee, Charybdis.
Charybd am I not, thou canker's son, thou vomit darling cur, engendered of a toad or of a whelk, thou festering catarrh, I love thee not.
Strikes, boy. Pray strike me not, good sir. My heart is weak as is your brain, but hence, good Putresco's nigh. Enter Putresco with an apple.
This fruit so crisp from yonder bough did fall, as she is fallen now from Schiller's love, and as in autumn fruit doth stink and rot as one long dead. Methinks another man, belike Charybdis, she who so long wept has suffered Polo, Marco of that ilk, to eat her whole.
Enter Marco Polo.
Ho, oh, good morrow, sir. The drought of summer passed, and in its place the leaves of autumn fall. I know your aims, and, good Putresco, I shall thwart you not. Wherein a subtler scheme may be discerned, thereat I bludgeon abrogation might, foregoing sense for metrical repose, and meaning for a brief and shoddy laugh, at whoso fails to comprehend the plot shall hanged be.
What a scroobious chap is this, than Schiller odder far I woot! To him, the East's prelector, fortune fat and effluent in his trading with the pole, I cry by nights and eulogize by days, without realizing I'm doing either, and on the whole do live a jolly life, but for my sanguine humour. Oh, this life is wearisome, and lest my evil plan should fail, a scaffold I erect nearby.
He bangs nails into a gallows.
Whose muscled arms shall hoist me to the sky, where dangling shall my fate be sealed, and thus Putresco shall evaporate to bus.
Exit. The second scene, a fire-gutted bus depot. Enter Marco Polo and servant.
Unhorse this mule, my trusty slave, and go to fetch another of the selfsame ilk, and we, immune from time and fortune's dust, shall sup a glass of sturdy ale, and go where naught but soap shall leave this putrid core.
Verily I shall.
Look to it, shun it not.
I shun it not.
And look thou leave no trace of aught that may betray you. Shun such things as drunkenness may lead you to disclose aught of my ill tent.
I'll do it straight, although I understand no word of this.
Yours, as reading of the poet should inform you of all meaning, whereupon dissemblance, as a master to his sons, will cry in anger at what evil deeds men do, is not to reason what, or why, or how, but when, that is the question.
Sir, I can but answer you with sickly groans, for I am sick at heart.
Infirmarize thee! In sickness lies the body prone to health. To madness now the mind, once saner far than silks and spice from distant Calicut, where now Putresco drives. His horses afire, his bus abandoned by the tidal Po, which as a lunatic doth without cease the spurkish bell twice hourly toll to warn us.
Mark, he comes. The ranted one is nigh, and we who haunt the towers now must fly.
Exeunt. Enter stage left. Schiller, Charybdis, and Putresco.
If anything you say I can believe, Putresco, this by order shall I run 10,000 leagues by pogo stick to gain the favours of the fair Rangoon.
Go, climb her towers, suck her moneyed hand, lurk your sordid days within those walls that hold within their shades all terrors known and some as yet unthought of.
Aye, but if...
No ifs or buts, Putresco, think again. She cannot do thee anything but harm. 'Tis Marco Polo you must fear. For when by Lethe's bowers he creepeth like slow time, he's verily no easy man to see, and he is hers, as is thy horse thine own.
My friend Charybdis, pray you be not mean. You have not spoke these 80 weeks to Schiller, nor uttered yet betimes a soothing saw, the knowledge of man greatly wise to increase beyond the bounds of sense. I charge you now, look to it.
Stay! A word I needs must speak concerning her that towers haunts with groans of pain, and yet whose beauty men doth craze with rapturous cries of greeting. Masterpiece of Aphrodite's art, her silken eyes remind me of the Chinese art of Yub, which dogs and goats depict in scalene form, as knew the sage geometers of old. Perpend! I hear an inner voice remark that time draws on, and now there... rising moon doth glow his lovely light o'er all this globe, whose beauty we shall presently destroy, to win hers greater far than any else.
Though greater far, I grant, it is not whole, nor yet I will admit of lesser size than that we have discussed before. But how to compass it in adamantine band, wherein are sealed the vanities of love, with our preposterous effigies of steel, I know not.
Woe, what ignorance is this?
Such lack of sense and woeful bane.
Disgusting failure to admit our cause.
I think these words of yours, my honoured sirs, belie the shattered fabric of your dreams, and of your father Polo's. Mark my words.
Your words, Putresco, hardly worthier than all the wisdom of the Greeks to live on any man's long tongue, I shun most roundly.
Fie on you, then! Get hence! Or you must face the squad of firing, or the selfsame gallows the which I have this very day constructed with my very hand.
He points to the gallows.
Your handiwork, my lord? I thought your limbs too weak to screw the frailest maid.
Oh, shun such bawdiness! I cannot answer till the sun has fled beyond the cares of mortal men, beyond the pale and cloud-ringed orbit of the hills where wilder folk do dwell. I answer not in any terms which you might understand, for comprehension's shunning is the goal of all that know the secrets of mankind. Enough of this. I'll to my bus. I go.
Exit, Putresco.
We'll follow, lest some mischief he shall work, to lay the anger of the dark-eyed Turk.
Exeunt. There follows a dumb show, in which random characters enact incomprehensible mimes before the gutted depot. The third scene, a ruined wharf. Great hubbub and rushing about of persons.
Boatswain, get thee to the warehouse quick. A fleeter fleet awaits our king, and he with 50 weighty cargoes of pure low with cry of nonny no forget in love the cares that weigh the regal shoulder blades, or cut in twain some other of that ilk, despairing of the wholesome split tin loaf that now awaits thee.
Sir, I beg to know what strange intent it has within the king's explosive edict, bruited now abroad concerning matters better talked of low, or not at all, and so I hold my tongue.
This man is fickle, yet he will not stay the mainsail badly in windy course. I liken him to yonder stately swan that now his downy brood doth yet chastise, while greeting them with happy praise and food. But signets are obedient. The seaman leaves in mid-course of his hope's reply an empty, airless thought.
Enter a Chinaman.
What ails thee, knave?
My poor serenity perhaps belies my deeper thought.
The Orient's effects are sweeter than the Occident's neglect.
Exit merchant. Enter boatswain.
The merchant finds in me such cause to weep as I have found in Megalitha's love, who largely doth embrace me in strong kisses, which spring, I fear, from wishes to advance her sense of bafflement.
She knows no whit of what the depot holds of transport. Ill bethought her mind has badly built this wharf.
He stamps on the rotting planks of the wharf. There is a loud cracking of wood, and he falls with a splash and cry to the water below. The third scene. A busy commercial centre where sacks of corn are bought and sold, though not by the same people, and where money is changing hands. Putrescu takes the merchant aside.
Tell me, sir, wherein the merchant's trade of profit and of usury, perhaps, might suffer to allow perusal of this unsightly crowd, the which, since nigh on dawn, has quibbled o'er the price of sundry sacks?
This, Putrescu, sir, is not the place where to discuss in strictest confidence the motives of my friends. Come in a while and see my newest scheme, the which in bed I dreamed of and have here set down.
Good sir, this doth amaze me like the cats that stray among the graves of those that hate the king.
It pleases you no whit ungratefully, sir.
As little as the rouge which whores affect wherewith to kindle the desires of men intemperate, as little as permits the stubborn mind to reach beyond itself, beyond that border unbeknown to him who tows no straighter line than curves about the vast bay of Basibode before, and comes to rest between his father's shins, yet unrevealed.
Despite the coming tide, I fear my ships will never leave the shore to fill the king's persuasion, and I do not, will you fulfil the honour me? The Jew.
Why seek you this? My plans are not unseen by those that scan the rude commercial press and hawk those columns for a profit.
But yet,
or two.
Perplexed, hold commerce as your aim and scorn the views of mercantile retreat.
Well, not withholding anything you need.
I, who know the seas, what need I now of plotters who expect my help? With low groans, I shall not help my trading plans or yours.
Thus mine will flourish when the king withholds his sweet commandment, no one sing.
Exit the merchant.
In time to come, who shall remember me? My terms of crime forget, I shall decease as leaves in autumn fall and pigs expire. Who shall remember me? My faults are all embossed on coins that shimmer in the mart as from one palsied palm to cankered curs or gangrene goats. Who shall remember aught of noble thoughts that stumbled through my mind, possessing all, though unpossessed by man, suppressing laws unwanted in these trials, obsessed by everything I see and do, sequestered from the obsequies of small, unknowing thugs who falter down the lanes, and here and there collapse and lifeless die, as if their lives had hated them and fled to bottled beer in hovels on the hills, which sets them coughing hoarsely in their sleeves, as does a hangman when his daughters die and dangle haughty from the gallows tree, which I myself shall emulate in mine. Oh, will it come? Oh, semi-palmate one, decrier of the king who rent my crutch in seven parts. Come, breathe my last and die. Who shall remember me?
He falls in a swoon as the merchant enters.
Who's this faint knave, his trousers round his throat, his knees all wry, belike, he is the self and same Putrescu, who I in betimes have concoursed with in speech, and speech no whit bereft of scandal, I'll be bound. Perhaps I'll nail him to my horse and hie me with him to some marketplace, and hang his wallet from a hazel tree where hazels grow. I woot. Oh, woot, woot, woot. I'll plant thee, and a waspberry tree shall grow, of supernatural powers possessed, of fruit that magic holds. Now come, my steed, Jerome.
Enter a mercantile steed, whereupon is slung Putrescu. Exit merchant and horse. The fifth scene. Fifteen?
Yes.
A rose garden beneath the tower of Timon. Enter Rangoon and three maidservants. My gentle maids, I prithee now make haste to prepare in great anticipation for the rival of my distant kin, my lord the brave Antipodes, my cousin's twin, and bearer of the seal of regal love unto most distant climes. Would he were here to see a virgin most unmanned by fright. Make haste, make haste.
Fair mistress, this we do, though we were long since past that lowly state wherein you have encompassed by our names strange harmony of doleful melodies passed by.
Indeed we shall depart.
In haste, lest impetigo spoil our whitened cheeks, and vertigo make green our laundered scarves.
Exeunt maidservants. Rangoon sits down before a mirror. What strange feelings whelm within my breast, within these fleshy lumps of mammal's drink, these pulpy paps that groan beneath the weight, that flop unsightly, bitten and besmirched by raging palsy, unromantic domes, unkenneled yet by whalebone halter stiff, my daughters illegitimate forget their father, from the whirlpool long since sucked by sage Aeolus' might. Oh, would I woot the glory of the king, my fearsome thane, the glory of the king, my fearsome thane, uncloud the sky of unwed marriages, where beaks proclaim the incest of the throne, and fierce contagion rages through the land.
What bloody man is this? Oats, feet, and hands! His true's in disarray!
What? Who goes there?
My lady, 'tis a Chinaman most queer, who shows us why we live so ill-informed, and kept from all things interesting or nice that may delight us. Leave we now this place!
Shun they the aught. Re-enter Rangoon. What things may do when as the weakest fail? Exit Rangoon. A trolley is wheeled on with tea-fare aboard.
Comestibles I bring of rancid ilk, the fetid bun, the most unpleasant milk, the nauseous delights of our canteen that turn all men an ochreish shade of green. Yet leave them not unglutted. In my care is every sailor cant that feeds on air.
Exit the trolleyman.
Wow!
A siren is heard off stage, followed by a dismy, gloomy silence, in which the occasional dripping of water cannot be heard. Then a bang.
Bang!
Enter Rangoon, tearing at her hair. Ye gods! She faints. Enter the Chinaman.
My poor serenity conceals.
Hello?
My deeper thoughts.
Enter Megalitha, Ascubar, Cahoon in violent disarray.
Look, our mistress faints. Her eyes are swollen. See her rancid breasts, deceased with vile and horrid germs, pulsate in rhythm with the coyote up the road who wails just as Rangoon did for her love, enchanted in the wood which used to grow hard by. But now her feet are decomposed, and two fat bags of haggis hang around, as is to tell us that our self-same fate doth soon await us. Oh, these breasts, I wish they were elsewhere, among the clouds, where women's faults are all forgiven, where some young lover takes her tea alone and sits unchastened by the mysteries of love. Oh, would these awful hemispheres were hence, in igloos dire or unfrequented tents.
Exeunt Megalitha, Ascubar, and Cahoon weeping piteously at their plight, carrying Rangoon in their arms. Enter, in haste and evening dress, Schiller.
Irrevocable doom! Unless it hap that I can flee from neath that bus's wheels and scape the vengeful wrath I cannot fathom, the which Putresco plans. Unless it hap that Polo's fate be changed ere next day's dawn. Unless Rangoon, oh name, unless Rangoon, but no, 'tis folly thus, alas, to dream. But now this bow is tied about my throat, and time our foolish hangman is abroad, and shan't return, I think, tith harvest moon, when all things clandestine and queer may do as them behoves, and I must keep abreast.
He slopes off. The follows. A long, embarrassed silence. Enter Marco Polo.
I wonder why yon Schiller shuns me so. He loves the desert while I haunt the snow. He shuns my well-beloved sky, and I, unloved by any, save the fair Rangoon, am scarcely thought of at the festive board that does this night take place.
Enter the boatswain, no whit dry.
Good sir, you see that yonder rotten pier, by lugworm bored and chewed by vole and nautilus alike, no wit. This pier, as might a fractured bone, when pressured by the club or cudgel, he regrets, I fear. Impassive, I resume my speech commenced some days ago to say I have forgot. Yet there is not withal a dearth of meaning in my words, therefore I'll cut this discourse short and now depart.
Exit the boatswain. Exit Marco Polo with a shrug of the shoulders. Schiller remains backstage, sitting cross-legged, weeping copious tears into a blue-spotted handkerchief. Enter Antipodes.
If siphons and illegible deceit take place behind the curtain hereabouts, I cannot know the future. Ah, but if the time to come revokes the furtive pass and draws a veil on such as may desist from honour or from vagrancy, from truth I shrink. I shun the adolescent kettle, but lo, 'tis carried.
Sire, my swollen head reports the boiling of our neighbour's sons in fetid gore. The slaying of an ox and spawning of the sheeted dead in streets, a hail of red-hot owls above the temple has been heard. What auguries are these? I do not know nor care. Pray, what's for tea?
I shall eat a bun, but as for you, you'll not be sated by such meagre fare as in this house is found. And so, methinks, if siphons and illegible deceits take place behind the curtain hereabout, I cannot know the future. Ah, but I can tell you all that happened in the past.
Enter another Antipodes.
I am your past, Antipodes, I am. I bring the bun you wish to chew. Betimes I shall not come again.
Exit Antipodes too.
Remarkable! I had not thought to see another self these 80 years. But since he's come, no doubt I shall dissemble, as a father might, before his hapless wife who on him dotes in feeble admiration. As his son, the truth of his ill deeds from all conceals, and yet I linger long and must away to greet the spawning of the Theban day.
Spits and leaves. Enter Antipodes with an amphora.
Now fair Rangoon's unholy fate doth weigh like feathers on my brain. Oh, that she still should dwell among us, we who know no ill. All save that villain, nameless must he go.
No, sir, name him not. No fame ascribe to that foul squire whose venomous desire not mighty Phoebus' strivings could contest, that white of black desires got of a crab.
Nay, of a wagstaff, sticking sin on sin, the tortures of machine and metal soul. I'm off to Trebizond, where I was born. Oh, Tembolo, this aught I shun, but hold.
Enter, furtive, Antipodes too.
I am the very spirit of Rangoon. On whose unholy fate you ponder long, and linger longer on the lust of liars, who claim to be who no one knows they are, just as am I.
Exit, furtively, Antipodes too.
What a scroobious chap! Than I more odd by far, I deftly deem. I'll crenellate my tonsure, singe my nape, jump out and navigate this naval ark. We bus apace, but oddly stop we now.
I saw not, Antipod, wherewith you spoke.
This surprises me, Putresco, not. For often when in Selene's dark hours, and mid fair Phoebus orgies neath the ground, I have a second self espied, and thus doth he betimes converse, or so it seems, with this my amphora, my coat, my staff, and yet in winter days with these my gloves, or else a bobble cap abune my pate. I understand it not. To discourse with objects widely held to know no mote of sense, or at least to converse seldom with us men, to me doth seem a travesty of reason, or reason as our reason apprehendeth, enigma to cold logic's shifty gaze, which variously doth play the minds of men, or minor key or major, or in modes of charm quite subterranean or martial, the worms to serenade which at our breasts the trumpeters of time my soul attests.
Aye.
Exeunt. Enter the boatswain.
I have shunned to speak full sentences, which vacuous in sense, though unbegun and often endless, sometimes not, no doubt, what fools may follow diligently, or scan, for my mind inhabits now the borderland of curious polysemy. Should these words contain one word that man can comprehend, then would the fair one rising in my sight, I own her name, were worth a pretty coin, be worth no more to me than yonder stoat, who runs the travel agents in yon swamp, who falsifies the tickets of the folk, who place their trust right foolishly in him, whose late renown has been not of the best, nor worse, alas. And on that note I leave.
Exit the boatswain, enter the merchant.
Methought the boatswain should I find herein, his chin unshaved, his wrists but newly healed, his feet but lately dried, a poultice new about his nether elbow, tightly bound in muscled agony, his sinews cleft, a sunbeam split, the heaven-kissing clouds to strike the earth, as I of late struck him upon the pate.
Enter the boy. The boatswain, is he here? I bear a missive.
You shall give it to me.
And you but give me reason.
That I shun.
Why so?
You'll question me to death.
Odds nape! I'll not unless it hap I do.
For God's sake, let's leap up and down and tell sad stories of the death of sundry folk. Your so-called missive's nothing but a joke.
They leap up and down as predicted. Enter the boatswain.
Odds reason, what's this jumping up and down? What twofold choreographic expertise be practised here within? What several joys are to the skies resounded, that the muse do put the leap within your limbs and make you frog the human limb?
I cannot tell, Sir Boatswain, for the cause whereby I jump in happy harmony with this weak knave, whose goading I believe may be the cause, the whom I lately have encountered here is likely not for the ears of me and thee.
Perchance the lad can say.
Perchance.
Or not, vile boy. I think the time is nigh at hand when we this wild exertion must eschew, for my weak limbs do slack.
He stopped jumping. Thou art more puny than all the protozoa in yon pond, where frogs do imitate inane's leapings and leechings lurch, and water beetles dive for the highest board in dizzy boldness clothed and hungry snarl. Yes, punier art thou, purulent Polo, masticated Marco, fool of the people.
Polo am I not. Such insults are the parody of years. Years I have lived before your very birth.
And please you, sir, my birth was not excessive. Withal a stripling was I, nor a twin, nor octuplet, nor yet miscarriage I. Not mighty Caesar did I emulate, nor old Macduff, nor anybody else of birth unseemly. Therein lies my strength, which with your weakness does a contrast make, so bold as doth the gods on high amaze. They're easily surprised.
Though vomit, darling, our cur you be, I woot, and thus is known, if I had a needle, thou should be sewn, flesh upon flesh, and muscle, tendon, bone.
Enter Putresco with a basket of apples.
The fools have cast me from their richest homes and stripped my finer clothes from this poor body, which now in sickness lies. I'm sorely racked by pounding heart, the aura of shame withal that weasel-like doth hound me o'er this moor, bearing this sorry pannier of fruit the red start to beguile. These fools have thrown me from their halls. I shun the reckless class that such acts perpetrate. I'll to my bus.
Exit, dropping fruit about him. Enter Schiller, picking up apples and putting them furtively in his pockets.
The drought of summer's past, my winter store must needs replenished be, and happy thus I'll fall enough for months. But fie, I ate the squirrel not in this alone. Of late I robbed a lesser white-throat's nest, 6 spotted eggs I took, no bird has more. All things shall starve when as the highborn bell shall wax apace his clangour seeds its discharge unto the ensphered skies. All sap shall cease to flow, all life to ebb commence, and then blazon once more fantastically to dust, as doth the sad crepusculate soul of men evaporate.
Good Schiller, Schiller, ho!
Who speaks?
'Tis I, of whom?
Speak up, can't hear, the word still less a syllable.
I die.
A strangled sob is heard. Oh!
Remarkable, methought a voice I heard, but oft in silence ears are led astray by noises such as these.
Oh, patterned harps,
Oh, decorated bombardums, I die!
Hist! A strangled sob.
And I were prone to such events. I had eschewed all sense and purpose. Fie!
He runs backstage, trips up on a ticket machine, and crashes loudly in the wings. Scene the 12th, in which we meet Rangoon. Enter Marco Polo, dejectedly.
When oft in pensive or in sullen vein, I have rejected aught that may be shunned. And now am I in turn been shunned by her, the damsel so fair who now amid the noisome systems of the joinery awaits him who shall fume her when he comes.
Marco!
At dusk, now shunned by her, I weep in vain.
Marco.
And yet I do take, for all the unions now are joined to fight the layabouts who rule in warlike clamour. It is the East. Their profits to increase. Such things are good, for they do wrap the universe about in painful convolution. Thusly, too, shall all Charybdis's wealth to me devolve, to me alone, to me and no one else, to none but I, a dweller of this skull and of this fragile symposium of flesh, wherein pulsating rivulets of gore and other fluids, too, I would cascade bust of revolutionary times and nasty drips. I'll tell no more. They make me think of her, of whose unholy feet I cannot think without two shudders. Silence for the cow. I linger over verses. Eggs in the oven, porridge in a porringer, I woot. Now listen I aside to what shall hap.
He lunges off. Pigall leaps.
Say, Pigall haps.
Pigall haps. Enter Marco Polo. Again.
Dejected I, of all men quite the most. Melancholy, melancholy I.
Melancholy.
Should linger melancholy. Not a while, abune this globe, except that there has been for hours no bus.
He produces a timetable from his pocket, and a large, that is, a very large map, which he spreads out on the stage. He cranks about on it.
Now, let us see. From here unto the wharf, by mule 3 days, by pogo stick 3 more, by automatic foot 1 other 4. How, transport lacking, should a sorry wight, who having cunningly compiled his task, wherein to save his fortune goes astray, then find his way to distant wharves, whereon to the multitudinous populace do seethe, with bad intent, but many a bulging pipe, loud and lusty there. And yet, methinks, a bus should have arrived thence, and fro at least so long as melancholy dogs the soul of this age, bereft of transport this age, a cringing relic of slow time it creeps, like woodworm in a piece of Greek ceramic, carving each rotten age my inner cares to chalky dust, like bride become a mistress ravished once, to terminate each month by sordid dog, wherein the orgy ceases, and modesty becomes once more the rule. Like bastard children, ever unbefostered, we live our subatonic lives and die, submerged beneath the arid, writhing sea, where powdered continents unhouse the soul, whose power contains the ocean twixt the land, though they should strain so far in rhythmic pulse, be swayed by sullen Selene's beguiles. As doth a lunatic in times of fear, who rampant steals the nunnery aby, with all a furtive glance therein to cast, just as doth the architect of foresty, when as a modest copse he doth espy, and stealthily doth creep therein to take a mossy handful of some rarer loam, and stink off homewards. Ah, that's how it is.
Exit Polo. Enter the Chinaman. I want to be water sprite. Exit the Chinaman. Enter the chorus in the metal cylinder, his head just visible.
This Marco is a sorry wight, as are all whose fates we hear, the stunted and the tall, the horrid, sordid, nasty, the fair Rangoon, whose pallid fate we read upon the moon.
End of Act 1.